This is the Live Your Edge podcast, episode 16. This is Gilbert. Welcome to the podcast. Today, my guest is Lauren Boyer, the CEO of Underscore Marketing. Lauren has been an expert in the marketing field for more than 20 years. And has led dozens of unique programs for brands of all shapes and sizes. So one of the things that Lauren specializes is in helping create strategic marketing solutions for customer products, retailers, energy, publishing, and entertainment brands. Today, we'll be talking with Lauren about her time in entrepreneur organization, some of the things she's learned about leadership, and some of her stories and learnings over the last few years. One of the key things that we will highlight is the importance of having support networks in your life. And we will also cover some of the tips for entrepreneurs starting off in their journeys. Join me in welcoming Lauren Boyer. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. Today, we have Lauren Boyer of Underscore Marketing, she's the CEO. Lauren is also on the board of EO, Entrepreneur Organization. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So today, we're going to sort of do a deep dive because we met at the NSA, National Speakers Association, last week in New York, and you mentioned that you were a board member of the Entrepreneur Organization. So for those that are not familiar with EO, it was founded in 1987 and now has over 179 chapters in 57 countries and over 13,000 members. And the requirements to become a member is that you need to have at least $1 million USD in revenue and annual turnover. So I was particularly interested because I haven't met a lot of members in the EO, and I'd like to learn more about one of the organization and, of course, some of the stuff you have been able to learn during your time there.
Absolutely.
Great. Let's get started. So my first question is, what has being part of, like having been part of this, a global organization such as EO, what has that taught you about being an entrepreneur?
That's a great question. I think before I joined EO, I looked at it online and I read about it. And it felt like a cult. I looked at it and I thought that doesn't seem like it might be for me. And as I investigated it, what I realized is this is a networking community of people that aren't about serving themselves through networking and trying to make more money off of one another, but rather committed to lifelong learning and thinking about how they can grow themselves in an effort to grow their businesses. And so I think the biggest takeaway that I found was, yeah, that is absolutely for me. And getting involved in ongoing learning, whether it be personal development that then impacts the business or professional development that's directly applicable, you know, to the day-to-day, I've learned a tremendous amount about what just the fundamental commitment to learning can do to propel your business forward.
Okay. Tell us more.
So I think a couple of things. There's peer-to-peer learning, which is part of EO. And in peer-to-peer learning, what that means is you're connecting with other members on a regular basis. And we form these groups that we call forums. And within a forum, the protocol is that you meet regularly. So most forums meet once a month for about half a day. And the forum is about 8 to 10 members. Some are a little bit smaller, some are a little bit larger, but roughly 8 to 10 members meeting once per month for about half a day. And you act as each other's unofficial board of advisors. So while all of these are private companies and they're privately held by the people that are owning and operating them and at the table, they're all businesses that don't compete with one another. And the folks get together and talk on a monthly basis about things that are challenges in their business in a way that they're all trained on. So the way that they're trained is called Gestalt. And in the Gestalt protocol, it's hard to say, but it's not hard to do. what you do is you actually refrain from giving any kind of advice to your fellow entrepreneur. And so you're listening actively to hear what their challenges are, and you're drawing out things in them that you hear are challenges so that you can repeat, oh, it sounds like this is a challenge, or it looks like from what I've heard that you're sensing this or that. But you're playing back what they're telling you. You're not ever giving advice. And through this approach, what you're able to do is share your own experience of something that happened in a similar fashion. And as the group goes around, and each person, you can imagine, shares an experience that's relevant but not the same and not problem solving, the person that's experiencing the challenge gets a lot of value out of it and is able to draw his or her own conclusion on what they want to do. And so you end up with this community of people that all behave in the same way and have a very strict code of confidentiality in the forum. So what that does is create complete safety in the environment and ability to learn from one another and share some of your deepest, darkest mistakes and wins. So how did you do it? And so that's what the Entrepreneurs Organization is about, you know, creating this community of people that connect in these smaller groups ongoingly. And then each of these smaller groups called forums is part of a chapter. And the chapters are, you know, within different regions. So for example, New York City has the New York chapter, of which I'm a member and on the New York City board. And we also have EO Brooklyn and EO Long Island. So in close proximity are other chapters. You know, EO New Jersey is very active as well, and they tend to do a lot of joint events with us. So you end up with regional groups that tend to see each other and get together and even extend those learnings.
So it's a sort of tradition to share among each other without having to like give advice per se, and rather serve as a soundboard for each other to share their problems and challenges in their companies, and also to get sort of to just have people there as a support network listen to your sharing. My question would be, what is one of the best things that you have learned through someone else's sharing?
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, so one of the things that I learned, and it was a really interesting takeaway, there was a personal thing that was going on in my life, and it seemed like I was shortchanging myself, and I was settling in a personal matter, and I didn't realize it at all. And through the experience sharing, I started thinking, you know, they started explaining these other circumstances that they had been in, and I recognized in myself that I might have done the same thing or been in the same circumstance. So I was actually able to get myself out of a situation that wasn't an ideal situation. And personal and professional are so linked. So when you're doing something like that personally and you're shortchanging yourself personally, there's definitely an implication to the business. So by being able to make that change in my life, I then opened up space to be so much more focused on how I apply that same mentality to the business and how, you know, the whole person grows, which then grows the business in kind.
So what I hear you're saying is that maybe you did not share particularly that personal issue that you had, but through listening to other people sharing that, you were able to actually resolve that problem.
Absolutely. Right. And it's about being able to be introspective and giving yourself permission to. Or for me, that's exactly what my experience has been. And, you know, being able to hear other people's true experiences in a safe environment where they're not holding back, where there's no judgment. It's not, you know, nobody's going to approve or deny whether something goes one way or another. Everybody really is truly there with genuine concern for the individual and, you know, whether or not they can deliver some kind of experience sharing that's going to make some positive impact. So when you're in that kind of situation, it's really easy to start to think about things and also to reflect back on things and apply positive experience so that you can start to change things in a more positive way for yourself.
So overall, what has that taught you about being a leader?
So overall, what I've done, so I've been an EO member for just over 5 years now. I'm going on 6. And what that's taught me is the more I give, the more free I am to be able to pursue the business in a bigger and stronger way. And so I've opened up transparency within my company to my employees. I've eliminated things like paid time off and holiday pay and stuff like that, and just created unlimited time off for when people need to take a break. It gives them the flexibility to get their work done. And we've created a lot of KPIs to make sure that people know what we expect of them. And, you know, we've talked to each individual about the fact that performance is important. And what we've seen is an incredible loyalty to the company with those, you know, those couple of changes. But there's many more things that have changed. I think, maybe a more timid leader. Timid's probably the wrong word, but maybe more controlling is probably the right word, where I like to keep things close to the vest and I like to feel like I was in charge of the outcome all the time. And I don't lead like that any longer. The way I lead is very transparently empowering people to be their best and to continue to learn and grow and to do their best. And I've seen my business double in the past 5 years as a result.
Wow. I think in modern day, a lot of people, a lot of leaders like to, especially entrepreneurs, like to be in control of everything. And I'm sure a lot of us listening could resonate with this, because either they run a small company or they have a mid-sized company. They might be facing challenges with trying to grow the company, but at the same time, not wanting to let go of this control. So what have you learned that was that allowed you to let go?
I think the biggest takeaway was that in experiencing other people's challenges, as you know, as they've told them and as they've shared them throughout the years, there's been this underlying understanding that I've come to that said, look, all entrepreneurs have challenges and they're not that dissimilar. And so as you navigate your own challenges, when you can visualize that there's a number of other people in similar situations, it's very helpful. So what it did was shift my mind. Instead of thinking about a challenge as something that could destroy me or you know, put a hole in something that I've built or be something negative, I've opened my mind to think about these things as opportunities for learning and growing that I need to achieve. And you can't control what challenges are thrown at you sometimes. It's how you navigate them. So the biggest takeaway was just framing the mindset and the approach that I took in a very different way. Instead of trying to avoid challenges and feeling like they're negative, I'm embracing challenge and looking at what we do to solve things differently so that we're set up for success as we continue to grow. And also, I have a fundamental belief that you either win something or you learn. And it's important to reflect and learn, and that it's not win or lose. So those are really some of the biggest things that have shifted in my mind.
So what is one of the biggest challenges that you've faced in your life, whether personal or career?
Well, I'll talk about the business. And I think it, in particular context to the smaller and mid-sized businesses, I've done some mentoring and, you know, I've found that even through that, there's a theme where you folks can end up with a client that's what I call an anchor client that takes up maybe 45 or 50% or more of their revenue contribution. And what happens to the business in that scenario is the business starts to respond to the way that that client's business needs it to. And it grows as that client's needs grow, but it doesn't grow on its own. And so the biggest thing that happens, you know, in my experience with Underscore, was our largest client left after a 5-year period of continually giving us more business and steadily growing. And they not only left, they gave us about a 60-day notice. We really had no forewarning whatsoever. So we were faced with a situation where the largest percentage of our revenue was going to leave in 60 days and we would need to respond. And so it was a terrible situation to be in. And you know, required us to take extreme measures to keep the business alive. It also required us to shift our thinking and to change how we structured the business. So the biggest takeaway was the anchor client seems like an opportunity, but it really is a watch out.
So there's also the adverse case, which is maybe the anchor client that you mentioned, they stick around, but they are making increasingly big demands that are steering the company away from its original vision. And maybe more and more resources of the company is devoted to try to suit their needs. Would you see it, there would be a time where you might, for the sake of the company, to cut loose this client?
Absolutely, yeah. So then, you know, in the situation where the client has become so large and then they become so demanding, what I've recommended is divesting, which is slowly starting to introduce the word no as you're really building out the sales force and building out the new pipeline of new clients that are going to replace this one dominant client. And then making sure that you distribute the client base as quickly as possibly.
Got it. So speaking of saying no to things, what has been something that was really hard for you to say no to, but it made all the difference?
So there was one example where we were looking to bring on new clients and we had an opportunity and something seemed to have fallen into our laps. And it was a great product launch, so an opportunity to be part of the launch of something. And just for background sake, Underscore is a company that plans, buys, and analyzes media. So when people are looking at paid advertising, they come to us for advice on what audiences to reach and where to put the message, whether it be like in the television format or digital, and what kind of digital or print or anything of the like. And the larger the client is and the more they're spending, the more complicated that answer is, as you can imagine. So here comes this client, and they look great. They look like they're very well funded. It seems to be a kind of a breakthrough product. And I think all those things were true. But when I started to dig in and I looked at this business, I realized this was a single entrepreneur who had raised a lot of capital through just two sources. And they were very personal sources to her. And she was looking at going to market in a way that I thought could make or break her business. And I actually told her not to use advertising as the method, even though I stood to make a lot of money off of it. And what I advised her to do as an entrepreneur and somebody that respected her business and did think her product was breakthrough was tell her to use a sales strategy and to do something completely different than the way that she was approaching it. So I think had I not been an EO, I might have taken the short-term cash and not thought so deeply about the client's business in that way, or maybe not even shared it or felt like I could share it. But as a fellow entrepreneur, I thought I had a responsibility to tell her that I believed there was a different way for her to grow her business and that way might be more successful. She appreciated it.
So it's really the focus would be on building the people, and also even people outside the organization, you would help them in a way where even if they, for instance, they're interested in your services, they might not be a good match based on their situation, and you would let them know, as opposed to maybe another company that would just take their business, you would probably steer them more towards the right direction. And I think that being part of, are you part of any mastermind groups?
I'm not part of a mastermind group, but I'm also part of there's a group called Quantum Shifts, which is KPMG and University of Michigan, and they bring together 40 CEOs every year. They just started this program a few years ago, and I was one of the first to be selected. And it's a business school type of environment and that type of thinking that focuses on how you can, you know, more from a academic perspective, grow a business. But so there's a lot of data behind what they're talking about, and it's not as experience sharing focused as what I do in EO. So it's a great compliment.
Got it. And any tips for those that are just starting out their entrepreneur journey, or maybe they start to get some revenue, but they're looking to, you know, scale their business?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing is recognizing where your strengths are and where they're not. So a great example is I was just talking to a couple of business owners yesterday, and they said, well, you know marketing really well. Would you mind letting us run the marketing strategy by you? So they did. And I looked at them and I started thinking about it and I started answering their questions. And then I said, well, can I be completely candid? And they said, yeah. I said, you know, you're salespeople and your business is small. Why do you think you need to do marketing? You know, why are you trying to do this drip campaign, which is what they were looking at, and, you know, trying to do email and CRM and a lot of things that are somewhat complex if it's not what you do every day. And they said, well, we think we have to. I said, well, but you're great at getting on the phone and your market is pretty small. So why don't you continue to do that and scale your sales team? And they were so relieved and so excited to be able to think about the fact that they didn't have to do something just because it seemed like, you know, one of the tenets of business. So I think it's giving yourself permission to say, I'm not good at that. I can't afford the right resource with that right now. Therefore, if it's not critical, mission critical, I don't need to do it just for the sake of checking a box. So I think that's the main thing that I wish I would have known earlier, because I felt like I always had to do things because that's part of business and you should be doing it, and, you know, all of these assumptions. But it's really breaking through down to what is it that you absolutely need to do? And if you can do it and you're an expert at it and you can scale it, then you should focus on that and then find the money and the resources to be able to fund what you can't do through other people that are able to. And feel free to get creative with that, you know, leveraging software, leveraging resources that might be external to the company, even, you know, outside of the US where the, you know, currency might be advantageous.
And I did mention that three questions from Tim Ferriss, and actually one of them fits quite well with what you just mentioned, which is, what is the best investment you have ever made?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I just happen to have an operation over in Krakow, Poland, and that operation is now 40 people strong. It started with two and quickly, well, over a decade, grew to 40, so not that quickly. But those people are really the inner workings of my company. And they're able to do things while the rest of us here in New York and New Jersey and Connecticut are sleeping. And so that's been the biggest investment. It's probably one of the more stressful investments in an economy where I'm not even a citizen with a language I don't speak, you know, and a background that I don't have, but actually has helped to grow Underscore tremendously. So I highly recommend stepping outside of your comfort zone.
So was that a result of deciding to slowly let go of the control?
That was an opportunity, and it was actually an experiment that, you know, with careful planning yielded. And so it was one of those things where you do some test and learn and you start to figure out how to optimize a process and a system and then scale it.
Got it. And what are the three books that have had the greatest effect on your life?
And that's interesting. I don't know that I directly attribute books to having an effect on my life. I've read a lot of books, but I don't know how I attribute that. I tend not to give them as much credit as I ought to, probably.
All right. Let's rephrase the question. Who are the three people that have made the greatest impact on your life?
Sure. That's a good question. So somebody that I grew up with who acted as almost a second father to me and taught me strategy early on is definitely very high up there. I think I grew up without a lot of material wealth as a child and, you know, in a home structure that wasn't always as secure as maybe I would like it for my own kids. Not a terrible situation, but could have been better. And, you know, I think back to the times where people took me in and helped me be confident and learn things early. So I definitely would put Kevin Spence up there as one of the top people. And then I worked with somebody else early in my career as I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I had learned the digital industry pretty early as it was forming. And this was a man who had worked in consumer packaged goods and had built his own advertising company. And he brought me into his company and put me onto his board at like the ripe old age of 23. So, you know, so Joe Barone was definitely somebody that left a mark on me in terms of being able to share his experience, which is really deep in marketing, and complement it with my nascent experience in digital, which was a nascent industry at the time. So those are two. And then I look up to other people that have built, you know, great examples of company and wealth. And I look at them as a big category as opposed to just one individual. So it's not like I look at, you know, any of the major billionaires that have written books or that people throw out there as names and say it's that one or this one. It's more of a category. And I think about, like, what have they done well and not well? And, you know, are there things that I can take away from that overall? So non-specific, I know, but I'm not gonna say.
And finally, what are your suggestions for on living life to the fullest?
Oh wow. Well, when I get there, I'll let you know. I think you know, one of the things I said to you when we first met was, you know, ask me why I'm not sitting at my desk right now, and ask me why I'm not sitting at my desk right now means that I'm working a lot more on the business than in the business day to day. And I think if you can find a way to take a strategic look at what you're doing, you'll find a lot more value and enjoyment in day-to-day things. So what I do is take myself out of the immediate situation to relieve the stress and pressure and look at things from a more strategic view. And then I also make sure that I take good care of myself. So I enjoy life because I'm healthy, because I take time to work out, I take time to meditate, I take time to read and do the things that I enjoy. I love to travel, and I weave those things in, even if it's in, you know, in within the business day to day. So I might have to go take a trip, and tomorrow I'm flying to California. Well, I'm going to stay the weekend, right, and take two more days out there to be able to enjoy some things that I want to do as an added opportunity, as opposed to just rushing back and, you know, feeling like the world's going to crash down if I don't get right back. So I think it's really a perspective of being able to seize opportunities in small moments and being able to be grateful all the time and to take time to thank people for what they're doing and to take time to really think about what you've achieved as opposed to always getting to the next thing so rapidly. If you just pause a little bit and reflect and then thank people, I think it goes a long way towards just overall appreciation and enjoyment.
Love it. We like to talk about efficiency and a lot of talk about 80-20. What would one thing be to help you remove yourself from the business? Of course, not completely, but so that you're working on the business rather than in the business. Because a lot of our listeners would probably like to know that because some of them are location independent or some of them are looking to do that or sort of free themselves either location wise or, you know, freedom from the office and work remotely and so forth. Is there a hack or any?
So the biggest thing that I did that was most liberating was to enable my assistant. So first, if you don't have an assistant, please get an assistant. And my assistant does everything from book my kids' haircuts to, you know, answer emails for me. And that's new to have somebody be able to look at my emails and, you know, feel like, you know, there's a complete open book. And I have a very strict code of conduct with my assistants and, you know, they know that there's complete confidentiality. So that's not an issue. But I mean, to have that freedom to know that somebody's looking into your inbox and knowing that they're going to catch something even if you don't is very freeing. So it takes you away from the computer all day and it takes you off staring at the emails on the phone. And like when we met, I said, you can text me, but if you send me an email, it might take a while. It's just because I don't allow that kind of stuff to take over my day to day. So it's like, what are the things, an email was just my burden, right? It might not be everybody's, but like, what are the things that are like the big things that keep you from doing what you want to do? And could you delegate those? Could you find some way, even if it seems like it's going to be difficult or it seems like it's going to take a lot of time to do it, could you invest that time so that you could see yourself in a few weeks or even a few months being completely free of it? And what would you do with that time? You know, and how could you spend that in a way that's enjoyable or even a part of it, you know?
That's great advice. So the big tip of the day is to get an assistant. Well,
yeah. And my assistant's in Poland too. So, and you know, we could talk about that another time.
Oh, that's
working.
Great stuff. Thank you for coming onto the show, Lauren.
Well, thanks for having me.
And if our listeners would like to learn more about you, follow you, where can they find you?
The best place to find me would, you know, at _marketing.com. That's my company. And I'll give you my email because my assistant reads it and they will make sure that you get preferential treatment. But Lauren@_marketing.com. You do have to spell the full word out. And just as a special thank you to the listeners, if anybody is big enough to be doing advertising and is interested in underscore products, I'll give anybody that's listening a 10% discount if you give them the code LB10.
Wow, thanks.
You're welcome. So probably, you know, most folks aren't at that level, but if there's anything we can do to help out, you know, certainly reach out and if we can do something even small, we'll see what we can put together for you.
Sounds good. Well, there you have it, Lauren Boyer. Thank you for coming on to the show, everyone. I will see you at the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.